Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoyed this message. For more information about this podcast or other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
As I was reading over these texts this week, I found myself thinking about this phrase that we hear all the time in the church, Christian community. It's a phrase that gets thrown a lot. There's all kinds of books and podcasts out there about Christian community, about what it is, about what it looks like, and how it works. And I know that I use that phrase a lot. And when I do, I typically tend, I think, to use it as a synonym for church or congregation or membership or worshipers. I use it to describe this group of people in this space, those of us who come here to worship, to serve on teams and committees, who volunteer, who take classes, who sing in the choir and ring the bells. I use it to describe the group of people who standing out here on East Avenue would look up at this building and say, "That's my church." I use it to describe us, the people who seek to align ourselves and our lives with the mission and life of Jesus Christ. But reading this text from the Gospel of Luke makes me wonder if maybe there's an alternative definition of this phrase, Christian community, that I've been missing. In our story, Jesus is attending a dinner party, and he's watching people choose their seats. And at the time, seating arrangements at a dinner party were pretty loaded with social implications. And Jesus is watching people choosing for themselves the places of honor, the places for people with status, the seats that are for really important people. And in response to witnessing this, Jesus addresses these party guests, and he says, "When you go to a dinner party, don't sit at the place of honor. Sit in the lowest place." He says, it's better to be honored in having someone invite you to move up to a higher place than it is to be disgraced in being ordered to move down to a lower place. Now, there's more to this reading after this, and we're going to get to that. But if we stop right here for just a moment, this seems pretty obviously like a story about humility versus pride, right? Jesus is naming that it's kind of a boastful and prideful gesture to enter a room and claim a place of honor as rightfully yours. He's saying, don't be prideful, don't be entitled, don't enter a room and just immediately assume that you are the most important person present. And honestly, I think we could probably just stop there for the day. That's a pretty important lesson still for us today, I think. Especially those of us who might be used to sometimes being treated by the world around us as though we are the most important person in the room. Especially for those of us who are used to simply getting to choose whatever seat we want because of what we look like or because of our gender or because of our titles or accomplishments or degrees or job or where we live or how much money we have. Perhaps those of us who fit into that category can hear in Jesus' advice to these party guests a warning not to overstep our bounds, not to take up too much space, not to dominate spaces or conversations, not to use whatever privilege we may have, whether it be male privilege or white privilege or economic privilege or educational privilege or whatever, to assert our authority or dominance or importance, not to act like we have somehow earned more of a platform than anybody else, not to act like we deserve to be listened to more than anyone else, not to act like we deserve more than anyone else, or that we're entitled to things that others are not entitled to. Jesus instructs us instead to embrace humility. We're to value the contributions of others. We're to step back and we're to listen. We're to make space. We're to empty ourselves of all that privilege that would make it easy to sit right down at the head of the table. We are actually to assume that we are the least important person in the room, and that everyone around us is someone important and beautiful and valuable, that everyone around us has something important and beautiful and valuable to share with us and to share with the world. But Jesus doesn't stop there. After addressing the guests of this dinner party, he turns his attention to the host of this dinner party, and he continues saying, "And when you throw a dinner party, don't invite important, wealthy, popular people. They might return the favor. Instead, invite all those who could never repay you. Invite all those who never get invited to dinner parties, the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, the unpopular, the socially awkward, those whose very presence makes others uncomfortable. And here, I think, the message takes a little bit of a turn. In the first part, there was perhaps a personal and spiritual lesson about pride and privilege and humility, but in the second part, the message becomes unarguably social. Suddenly, this text isn't just about how we think of ourselves or regulate our own behavior or how we decide our place in the community. It isn't just about how we act at the party. It's about what party we even go to in the first place. Jesus says, when you are throwing a party, when you're hosting an event, when you're offering hospitality, surround yourselves with the people who have no social status. Surround yourselves with the people from whom, in terms of social ladders, you have nothing to gain. Surround yourselves with the people who routinely, over and over again, get the short end of the stick. Surround yourselves with the people who are actually looked down upon by successful, good, and upstanding citizens. And I think it's worth noting here that Jesus actually doesn't just say, surround yourselves with the poor and marginalized. He also actually specifically says, don't surround yourselves with the rich and important people. This isn't a both-and situation. I've been sort of paraphrasing the scripture here, interpreting it, but it actually reads, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors. Invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. So this second half of the narrative casts the first half in a different light, doesn't it? Suddenly, this isn't just a text about the importance of personal humility. Suddenly, our presence at the lowest end of the table isn't just about a self-sacrificial gesture in which we embody humility and grace and shed our privilege. That's, of course, still important, but at a deeper level, maybe we realize that this is a lesson that isn't about us at all. Rather, it's about the community that exists at the lowest end of the table. Both parables, the first containing advice offered to guests and the second containing advice offered to hosts, are about whom it is that we are to be surrounded by. They're about whom it is that we are to be aligned with. They're about the people among whom we are to make our home. They're about the people whom we are to spend our lives rubbing elbows with. And that phrase, rubbing elbows, is kind of a loaded expression, isn't it? It doesn't really just mean to come into contact with or to mingle with at a party. It tends to refer to coming into contact with and mingling with a certain kind of person or people, right? We mention that we rubbed elbows with someone when that someone is famous or wealthy or important or some kind of person of note. It's a privilege to rub elbows with certain crowds that meet in certain venues and exist within certain spaces, just like it was a privilege to sit at the seat of highest honor at a first century dinner party. Or just like it was a privilege to have important people attend your dinner party and then in return invite you to theirs. Rubbing elbows, as a phrase, inherently describes aspirations of climbing the social ladder, recognizing that personal gain is all about connections. Jesus, in our reading today, witnesses this kind of thinking. He witnesses all of this privilege and social ladder climbing and elbow rubbing and jockeying for position, and he has something to say about it. His words here are a direct message to people concerned with social hierarchy and status and honor and wealth, and he instructs them to sit at the lowest place. And here's where we get back to this idea of Christian community that I started with. Jesus' teaching here to the people at this fancy dinner party is this. Surround yourselves with the people who sit in the lowest places. Surround yourselves with the people who are not viewed by the rest of the world as important. Be in community with those whom the culture around you deems unworthy, unimpressive, and useless. Spend your time there, converse, build relationships, and don't just be a tourist among the poor. Live there. Make those spaces your home. Make the people there your community. So I wonder, maybe the quote-unquote Christian community isn't the people who purport to follow Christ and show up at the dinner party doing their best to follow his advice of humbling themselves. Maybe instead, the Christian community exists at the lowest end of the table and is made up of whoever finds themselves there. And we are free to either join it or not. Perhaps we're used to thinking of this quote-unquote Christian community as being made up of people who align themselves with certain belief statements or gospel principles, or who live in some kind of covenant relationship with each other. Perhaps we're used to thinking that we have to draw boundaries around what is and isn't Christian community based on professions of faith or marks of discipleship. And I think maybe in some ways, sometimes that's true. But what I'm pointing to this morning is the fact that an alternative understanding of Christian community is more expansive, and that it highlights for us the community out in the world that we as Christian disciples are called to be part of. This alternative understanding points to the fact that the entire concept of Christian community isn't intended to draw boundaries around our churches that separate us from the world. It's intended to shepherd our involvement and investment in the world in a specific way. So what if the Christian community is not the people who align themselves with Christ, but it's the people with whom Christ aligns himself? What if the members of the Christian community are the people that Christ calls us to spend time with, the people that Christ calls us to visit and to welcome and to know by name, the people that Christ calls us to care about and love in a personal way, the people that Christ calls us to live our lives in solidarity with, the people that Christ calls us to live our lives alongside? In short, what if the Christian community is made up of the people that Christian disciples are supposed to be rubbing elbows with? This understanding of Christian community provides us with a different vision for Christian living. It brings into focus the necessity of leaving behind the places of honor and high-profile guests in order to make our home in the lowest places among those cast out. Which means, unfortunately, that what we can't do, if we truly want to be part of the Christian community, is sit at the highest place, but also try to lean down the table far enough that we're also sort of part of the community that finds itself at the lowest place. What we can't do is invite the most important people to our parties in order to talk about our concern for the least important people who didn't get invited. Do you see? If that's the extent of our engagement, then we're not even part of the Christian community. Not by excommunication or banishment or divine judgment or anything. We're simply not part of it because we haven't joined it. We're at the wrong party. The Christian community is meeting somewhere else, and we're not in attendance. I think that there's a danger in outreach ministry in many churches today, especially in predominantly white upper middle class churches like this one and like any number of churches that I've been a part of in my life and my ministry. And that danger is to slip into creating this dichotomy in our outreach ministries between us and them, between the servers and the served, between haves and have-nots, between the Christians and the recipients of Christian love expressed through the Christians. And the danger in that thinking is that we end up unintentionally, maybe even unconsciously, pigeonholing Christianity as a movement that's made up by and exists for people who are not poor. And then the Christian ethic and way of life becomes about offering charity from our places of relative comfort to those who have less. And that danger is twofold. One, it in many ways reinforces the very power dynamics that Christ came to eradicate. The claiming of our faith as a faith that motivates haves to serve have-nots only serves to actually deepen the boundaries between those two groups of people. And two, slipping into this way of thinking completely loses sight of the fact that both Christianity and Methodism were originally movements for the poor and of the poor. The original Jesus movement was a mass gathering of the lowest members of society, the poor, the lame, the blind, the crippled, children, women, people who were not treated justly by the culture and society that they were surrounded by, people who had known personally injustice and abuse. Perhaps claiming an understanding of Christian community as being the group of people that these movements exist for can help us get back to our roots. Perhaps this reframing of who constitutes the Christian community can serve as a continual reminder that for a Christian service to be faithful, there cannot be an us and them. The Christian community actually can't reach down to offer charity because the Christian community inherently always exists at the bottom of the bottom. I read in a book called Good News for the Poor by Theodore W. Jennings. It's a great book about John Wesley, the founder of Methodism's economic teaching and the early economic practices of the Methodist movement. I read in this book the other day that in the early days of Methodism, a gentlewoman, a woman of high social status at the time, had joined one of the early Methodist societies. And John Wesley wrote this woman a series of letters, all of which were concerned with how important it is for her to spend time with and visit the poor. And he writes in one of these letters, "Go and see the poor and sick in their poor little hovels. Put off your gentlewoman. You bear a higher character." I love that. Make your home at the lowest place among the lowest people. Shed your higher status because you bear a higher character. The opening of our new outreach center at 1010 East Avenue, hopefully by the end of this year, is a huge opportunity, I think, for us as a congregation to move in the direction of more fully embodying this teaching of Christ together. The Outreach Center is intended to be not only a place where people can come and get a hot meal and a shower and warm clothing, medical treatment, groceries, and fresh produce. It's also intended to be a refuge and a gathering place, a place that welcomes everyone and anyone, an outpost of the kingdom of heaven, a place where resources are shared and where worldly privileges and statuses are shed. It's intended not only to be an outreach center, but also a community center. I sometimes wonder if we should name it that instead. A place where Christian community, the kind that we're talking about this morning, can thrive. It's intended to be a place where the most honored guests are the people who never get invited to dinner parties anywhere else, and where everyone who enters chooses to join the community found at the lowest place at the table, and what we're left with is a table that has no hierarchy at all. Many of us have a long way to go in following Christ, in living our lives alongside the poor and marginalized, in joining this Christian community that Christ aligned himself with. But perhaps there's potential in the launch of this outreach center to take a small first step together. Perhaps there's an opportunity to recommit ourselves to not just service, but relationships, personal encounters, solidarity. Maybe there's an opportunity to show up and be present in a new way, to have our hearts be transformed, to have our lives be changed. As we move towards this opening, I would invite you to consider how you might participate in the life of the church through this outreach center. How you might volunteer, how you might grab hold of the chance to join the Christian community that will be gathering over there. Let us follow Christ to wherever it is that the Christian community is gathering. Let us sit at the lowest end of the table. Let us invite to our parties the poor rather than the rich. Let us shed our pride, our status, our privilege, our importance, and our social hierarchies. Let us pursue God by climbing down social ladders. Let us spend our lives rubbing elbows with the Christian community that we find there at the bottom. Let us align our lives with Christ by living alongside all those with whom Christ aligns himself. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, live fully, serve all, repeat.